Karabhavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shribasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Prabhupada ki jai. Okay.
So we just finished the Padma Puranas thing, Maharaj.
Okay.
And now the following section is a footnote added by Gopala Bhattas Goswami.
His own footnote.
In Narada Pancharatra, in Narada Pancharatra, Bharadvaja Samhita 3.22.25, the process of atonement for a Vaishnava is described. The list of 5 verses. For a Vaishnava, the highest kind of atonement is full surrender to the Lord. Otherwise, one should perform activities while remembering Lord Vasudeva. By seeking the Lord's devotee, touching his feet, serving him, feeding him with cooked grains and water, speaking sweetly, taking the dust of his feet, and drinking the water from his feet, eating Mahaprasada of the Lord, and chanting the names of the Lord, one can purify oneself, especially from the contamination of seeing and touching non-devotees. One who constantly engages in worshipping Lord Hari is considered to have performed all activities like sacrifice, charity, penance, austerity, atonement, etc. Again, there are other statements in 2.59 and 3.73. To perform activities which are related to the Supreme Lord is the occupation of the Vaishnava. And the same activities repeated again and again is called Prayaschitta or atonement. Those who have fully surrendered to the lotus feet of the Absolute Personality of Godhead are freed from all kinds of sinful activities which they committed previously or may happen to commit in the future. Such type of surrender are the atonement for all offenses.
That atonement, because if we see from 11th canto, because there's a particular angle of vision, is where you're used to looking at it from this inductive, you know, method, is that we're looking at from our environment. And, you know, the world that we see, you know, what we can perceive and, you know, our values, we look at that and that is what is important. And then you're adding to it Krishna, who is more important, but still there's the element that he's important. I mean, that the material world has this importance because it's our perspective, our view, our field. And so then we're looking at it that anomalies in the field that needs to be corrected because it's wrong, right? So we're applying our sense of justice, you know, the inherent nature of justice within the jiva on justice according to our field, because we're not applying justice according to someone else's field. If it's out of our field, then we don't even think about it. So we only apply it to our field. But then we see from the actual samasti, from Krishna's point of view, this descending aspect, the material world is the place for the jivas who are inimical towards Krishna to come and to be purified and come back to Krishna. So the actual point of atonement is to atone for actually what the material world is for. It's for freeing us from this tendency to be inimical towards the Lord and to see everything in context of the Lord and see everything, you know, in affection for the Lord. So the real atonement then is uplifting the consciousness that we see everything connected to him. So real atonement is that which develops attraction to the Supreme Lord. For all other atonements are as illusory as the item, the activities that go on in the material world. It means they're all temporary. Well, when we say illusion, we don't mean that they don't exist. We mean that they're temporary and they have no actual lasting benefit or effect on the jiva themselves. And so, therefore, the prayaschitta that's here is like, it's like doing prayaschitta in a dream. You know, it doesn't actually have any real effect because the activities performed in the dream don't have any effect, and therefore prayaschitta in the dream doesn't have any effect. So the waking state is being awake and being awake to Krishna. That then is, you know, because being awake means being Krishna conscious. So engaging in that, that purifies us for that, for, from those other activities, other tendencies. So steady devotional service, any devotional service will be some, but when we say that it's effective, steady devotional service, that's actually prayaschitta. And all other ideas are actually illusion. That's not real prayaschitta. That's why the example is given of the elephant's bath. Because you don't become purified. These other methods do not remove the desire seeds from the heart. And so if you don't do that, they will come back. But at least the Vedic things will remove some aspects of the, you know, maybe some of the effects in the future of the Prarabdha karma and stuff like that. You know, these other aspects, the kutaj and the fulan mukha or Prarabdha, especially if it's going for many lifetimes and stuff like that. So it may deal with that, but because you don't get rid of the desire seeds, then the desire will come back. And one will do, you know, things again. But we see what mentioned here, Gopal Bhatta Goswami has quoted that not only do you get purified in this life, you know, and from now, but things that you might do in the future. You know, things that according to the impurities in the heart would end up in doing something improper in the future. Those, even those things are removed. So that's real prayaschitta. So those with intelligence, or in other words, the pure Vaishnavas, then they see that, yes, this is the path of atonement. And so being engaged regularly in devotional service, as recommended by the acharyas under the direction of the spiritual master, then that will actually create atonement. And all other things, those are, you know, sad, but they're, unfortunately, they have no benefit or effect for anybody. You know, this, it's just like if I say, if I become a millionaire, I'll be happy. But when I'm a millionaire, I'm not happy. I think when I become multimillionaire, I'll be happy. When I become that, I'm still not happy. When I become a billionaire, I'll be happy. No, multi-billionaire, trillionaire means you never become happy from these things. So in the same way, as these atonements will never actually make one happy, or will make the community happy, or make the administration happy. You know, whoever's involved within that, those who want to see justice, those who are affecting justice, those who are carrying out the justice, or, you know, those who authorize it, those who adjudicate, all these things, is that they will not be able to actually purify. And that's why, as we discussed yesterday, no one is satisfied. Even if we give, people still aren't satisfied. No, it should be more. And even if it's more, oh, that's still not enough, because it doesn't purify. You know, so it doesn't matter. You keep, you know, Prabhupada said, like, you have an itch, you scratch, and it will never be satisfied until the point where you're scratching, and then the skin gets damaged, and there's blood. And then you have to stop. But the point is that it can't, because your dead matter, what's the benefit? How does dead matter be purified? You know, so the point is purifying the consciousness. That's the real thing. And the only real lasting is when it comes to Krishna consciousness, and stable and steady Krishna consciousness, especially when you see it comes to the platform of Dridha Shraddha, when it's fixed, firm devotion, And then that, then from that, then there's application of steady devotional service. That then you could say is the, you know, solid platform of prayaschitta. And before that, it's going to bring you to there. And after that point, continue with that, it will bring you to bhava and prema. So just as Krishna in the 11th canto then makes the point that piety is actually being Krishna conscious, and not being Krishna conscious is impiety. So it's nothing to do with the rituals of the material world. It's if you're endeavoring for Krishna consciousness, that's piety. If you're not, that's impiety. And that's Krishna's definition. So therefore, we can see is that real prayaschitta, by Krishna's definition, is pure, steady, pure devotional service in the association with the pure Vaishnava. We're good?
Yes, well, shall I read?
Yes, please.
Yeah, this sentence that to perform activities which are related to the Supreme Lord is the occupation of a Vaishnava, and same activities repeated again and again is called atonement. That was the definition given of atonement.
Yes.
Okay, later. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 6.116, it is said, just as a pot of liquor cannot be purified by washing with water, similarly, those who are not surrendered to the Supreme Lord Narayana cannot be purified by undergoing so many atonements. This ends the footnote. Next.
Yes. So that's why the karmis are never satisfied. It doesn't matter how much prayaschitya, how much money, how much facility, how much respect, whatever they get, they'll never be satisfied. And because of that, without training, they become more and more greedy, try more and more ways, you know, to become satisfied. Like someone just told me about, you know, like in banking. They're never satisfied. So before it was, you know, they had all the wealth, you know, the gold and silver and these kind of things, valuable things is what they kept in the bank. And from that, then they loaned, you got money. So there was something to back it up. Because of their greed, then, you know, how much of that is there and how much can they get control of? So then they worked out a system where there is no gold, there is no silver. You know, in fact, they don't even have cash that much in the bank. It's all just, on goodwill. And so then that's going. And then, you know, people, they put money in the bank and you get a certain amount back, you know, it's like your savings account or, you know, checking account, get less, savings account a little bit more. So, but because people have, they have money in their account that they can use. And at any time, they might take it and use it for stuff. And at the same time, you know, so that for the bank will lose it. And at the same time, it's just sitting there in the bank. And so then, they have to keep a certain amount there. They've come up with this new scheme. I forget what they call it. But it's where you allow them to use a certain amount of your money for investment. And they'll give you therefore a higher return. So instead of 7, you know, point something percent, you'll get 8 something percent, right? They'll give you 1% more. So most people think, oh, that's great. But what it does is it ties up your money so you can't spend it. So that means it stays with them, because if it's in your account, you might spend it. This way it stays with them, you know, for a certain amount of time. And at the same time, as then when they're using it now, they can, at least if they're, a solid, good average, they can make 40% off the market. And then they give you 1%. You know, I mean, so they're going to be expenses. They have to pay people and this and that. But I'm sure that they'll make, you know, good 30% or something. And they pay you 1%. So we can just see here. And then they tie up your money. So now you can't spend your money in the name of you're going to get 1% more. You know, if one thing, if they gave you 10% more, so, you know, I mean, instead of giving that, they give you, 15, 20%. Okay, then it has some meaning. But no, they keep everything for themselves. They're so greedy. They won't share anything. And they work out more and more ways that they'll take your money. You know? And you notice that if there's a loan, it's compounding. But if you're getting percentage off the thing, no, that's per annum. It doesn't compound. So that's the fun part about it. They work out ways to just get more and more. So my point is that the greed is so great that it doesn't matter how much you get, it won't end. So the only way to end, and this is a sinful mentality because it's opposed to Krishna consciousness. It's opposed to Krishna, you know, serving and interacting with Krishna. So therefore, the only prayaschitta, the only way to purify is through steady devotional service, you know, under the direction and in the association of the devotees. There isn't anything else. So that has to be, and if one appreciates that, that's firm devotional service. And if one thinks, no, but there's this and that, then that is tamoshraddha or malleable devotion, you know, faith. We're good?
Yes. The phrase Sad Bhudevadi refers to devotees of Krishna and the Vaishnava Brahmins, Bhudeva, who are purified by name, mantra, and Gayatri. Adi refers to all other living entities. Therefore, attainment consists of worship of and the service to the devotees of Krishna. That service consists of bathing, feeding, offering drinks, garlands, sandalwood, and cloth. Because of his complete surrender to Krishna, the devotee is always internally and externally similar to the Lord himself. He is therefore pure. He has no need to perform fruitive vows, or wear kusha grass rings for purification. Referring to the fourth verse quoted from the Padma Puran, the devotees of Krishna means one who has none other than Krishna as his worshipable deity. Naishtikaha means one who is conversant with Bhagavad Dharma and is faithful to the Lord. Muni means a person who knows what must be done. A Vaishnava should not worship demigods such as Ganesha. Neither should he offer obeisances to their deities or to pots that they have been installed in. He should not look at them.
We also, as it mentions before, we have these debts that have to be paid. But the way to pay is because those are all potencies of Krishna, you know, all aspects of his universal form. So we pay that debt by serving Krishna in devotion, not as a temporary anga of karma gyan. And the same way is that, you know, before doing rituals and this and that, you have to worship Ganesh. You know, that's the rule. But we worship through worshiping the spiritual master. So, you know, so therefore, either that says at this point, do Ganesh Puja means that's what is there. So what is your method of doing that in connection to the Lord? How your ritual for worshiping the spiritual master, how you're going to deal, you know, the parampara, anything. That's going to be then how you do. That's not that we worship Ganesh. You know, so the prayaschitya, the worship of the demigods and all these things, these aspects there, the rituals for purification, you know, I mentioned before and the kusa grass and the rings, is that that we see that in the Archanpadati, that the way of bhuta shuddhi means to purify all the elements in the body. So it's actually, if it's done in its classic sense, you're destroying all the elements of the body, putting them all back, putting in the nectar, and then making it so it's nice for worshiping Krishna. But then the acharyas have given, you know, as long with Lord Chaitanya's verse, Naham Vipro, that it's a matter of meditation, that I'm the soul, I'm servant of Krishna. I turned away from Krishna, now I'm turning back to Krishna by the grace of Guru and by his mercy, then I can be engaged in the service of Lord Chaitanya and Radha and Krishna. that actually accomplishes real Bhuta Shuddhi, because you're purifying all the gross and subtle elements of the body through changing the consciousness to I am the pure servant of Krishna. That then attains actual the standard of Bhuta Shuddhi. And so then in that state of Bhuta Shuddhi, now worshiping of the spiritual master instead of Ganesh, then worshiping the Supreme Lord instead of all these other personalities and demigods and all that perfectly goes. So it's very scientific that we're worshiping those aspects of the Lord. And they have those traditions, but we're accomplishing that through worship of the Lord. It's not like, oh, these are one path and this is the other. No, this is the path. And for those who are not following that path, then there's these various breakdowns where you don't see that it's the Lord, but you have to do all that when you could just worship the Lord. So in other words, you know, could you imagine that you can either just go up to the person and recognize, oh, Hari Bol, how are you? And, you know, whatever it is, you know, offer obeisances or shake hands or, you know, pat them on the back or whatever it is that you're going to do, and you deal with them, the person. Or you could go through respecting, you know, the big toe, then the mid, then the next toe, then the next toe, then the Latin, that's on one foot, then on the other foot like that. Then you have the fingers, you know, like that. Now are we going to respect the toenails themselves? I mean, like that. And so then we go through, and then there's the joint, and then there's the this, and then there's the toe bones connect to the ankle bone connects to the, shin bone to the knee bone to the thigh bone. You know, then you're going to have to get out and break out and do the whole song. And since you're doing the song, then you need your jug band along with that. You know, and it's a whole trip getting the lady that plays the spoons, you know, because she's always, you know, generally, you know, so much in ignorance, she's never around. And so all these things go. And if she doesn't come play the spoons, your song doesn't go right. And, you know, you don't connect all the bones together. And so therefore, you haven't worshipped the person properly. But just directly deal with the person. You don't have to do all those other things. You don't have to recognize all those other, because you deal with the person, it automatically, his clothes, his arms, his legs, whatever is connected with him is there. You know, so that works. So that's the thing, is that it's not that it is a system. And then there's also other systems like all paths lead to the Supreme and all that. That no, there's one path. And you either recognize it in its natural form in Bhagavad Dharma, or you recognize it as yoga, as jnana, as karma, you know, or you don't care at all, and you just, by modes of nature, attracted to, you know, Krishna and his act and the activities through vikarma, where you don't even know that it's the Lord. You're just attracted to your senses and eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, and all these different things. And, you know, you follow, you somehow or another do it properly, you get better results, or if not, you don't. Does that make some sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, please. Yeah.
A Vaishnava should not worship demigods such as Ganesha, neither should he offer obeisances to their deities or to pots that they have been installed in. He should not look at them, glorify them, or remember them, nor should he blaspheme them. What to speak of blaspheming the demigods? It is not proper for the Vaishnava to criticize any moving or non-moving living entity. The servant of the Lord should not eat the remnants of demigods. O Narada, the association of those who worship any demigod should be avoided strictly. Thus, a soul fixed in his actions to please the Lord becomes fully surrendered. So, yes. After Padma Purana Maharaj, now the sixth one, Vishnu Purana.
Okay. Which has more evidence. Just one thing in there, just in case it comes up. So some may say, well, Lord Chaitanya went to these different temples and offered obeisances and this and that, but he's worshiping Vaishnavas. He's not worshiping demigods. So that has to be very clear. You know, we can't just go by the external. No, but it's the demigod. And so he worshiped, therefore it's all right to worship that. No, he's worshiping Vaishnavas. That's all. Yes, please continue.
Vishnu Purana, more evidence forbidding worship of devatas. In the Brihat Vishnu Purana, it is said, the followers of Lord Vishnu should neither wear kushagra rings perform sankalpa, follow the path of fruitive activities, or worship demigods like Lord Shiva, etc. Comment. Sattvata means the followers of Shuddha Sattva or the devotees of Lord Vishnu only. The words Kamya and Cha refer to the worship of Devadas and Pitris, which are daily or periodic. These should not be performed by the Vaishnavas. Next, the difficulty in performing Devata worship. Those who are entangled.
Yeah, sorry. You just see is that from so many different shastras. So this is not just one quote that we can say, No, he's giving from so many angles. So it's exhaustive that there isn't, from all these different places they tell, that it's just not done. And we see is here is that Vishnu Purana is a Sattvic Purana. So therefore, you know, as the Vaishnavas, that it must be, you know, taken seriously. And when he says Maha or the Brihad, Vishnu Purana, I think that would include the Vishnu Dharmotra. So it would be the whole thing. And so therefore, you know, it's showing it's authoritative that it's just not done. These things aren't, it's always the same things mentioned. It's not that every place is giving a different list. No, they're all giving the same. Some include, you extend more, but always they have those basic points of that. Please.
The difficulty in performing Devata worship. Those who are entangled in karma worship the Devatas and Pitris through daily and periodic rites. They must worship individually all the 33 million demigods such as Ganesha, etc. If a person performs Shraddha, he must start with his father, mother, grandfather, great-grandfather and worship all those forefathers up to those who are generated directly from Lord Brahma, the creator of the universe.
That's the Gotra.
Yeah.
So in other words, when someone's a Gotra, means they come from those 21 Prajapatis. So you have to take it back to there. But even it says those who are generated by Brahma, because even of the Prajapatis, then there's 21 of them, but then there's only 10 sons of Brahma. But then of those, you know, Narad, the four Kumaras, and I think Shiva aren't included in the Gotras. And so therefore then, you know, the other ones. So you have to get to them and then, you know, through these others. Yes, please.
Is there a problem if one does otherwise? The question. Four scriptural evidences are given here. In the Brihad Vishnu Purana, it is said, O King of Kings, in every ritual, everyone must worship all the demigods and forefathers. Otherwise, everything is fruitless. Comment on this verse. Lokanam means those materialistic persons who follow the path of demigods, forefathers, and Vedic activities without considering their permanent and perishable result. Why means certainly. Sarva Karmashu means in all Nitya, Naimitika, and Kamya karmas related to forefathers and other demigods. Sarve means the 33 million demigods beginning from Ganesha and all the forefathers beginning from one's own mother and father up to the person who is the ultimate founder of his dynasty, who is born from Brahma. The word Cha refers to all the relatives and lineage of one's family. O King Yudhishthira, they all should be worshipped. If someone is worshipped and another is not, then the whole performance will be useless. Similarly,
it's interesting that this is what the rule is, and the shastras are explaining this. But people, because of greed and their materialism, then, you know, they don't think, well, how can I do all that? And so they'll just, you just have to do this and just have to do that. So then they'll do that aspect of where you just simplify based on that it's easier for you, that you're doing less work, but you're supposedly getting the same result. Mm-hmm. So we see that it's a very standard thing when you're working within the religious principles that they'll simplify like that. Because other things are just too much trouble and they want less trouble. They want the same result with less trouble. But here is that you want, why the same result? You can get a greater result for less trouble and even less than the trouble that they try to, how much they reduce it down to by worshiping the Supreme Lord. But then that means surrender, and that giving up the idea that I'm the controller and enjoyer. And that's the thing that they don't want to give up. So because of that, then they'll rationalize, they'll adjust, they'll make all these different things, they're being, broad-minded, liberal, and all this, and all these different things, when actually it's just different tricks to make it so you avoid serving the Supreme Lord.
Also, Maharaj, the classic example is if you basically want to purchase some land or something where it is little, it's not clear, then you need to get permission from so many departments. But if the government gives you, then nobody asks anything. Means the prime minister or similarly, with the demigods, it's like going to each officer and trying to get a signature.
Yes.
Who is that? And there is not only in that office, like if you go to MRO office, the main Mandal Revenue Officer is there, but there are so many people under him. You need to know, to go get this fellow's signature, that. Basically, you need to please everybody in all departments.
Yes, yes. Then only you get. Yeah. So if you don't do all that, you don't get the benefits. That's a very good example. Very nice example. But how much trouble it is,
Yeah.
So much trouble. But because of desire, they're willing to go through it. But for the devotees, if there's no desire, they just want to please Krishna. And then whatever comes, then that's what they have. And then it's no trouble. They just accept what comes easily without that endeavor.
Similarly, next group, Maharaj. Similarly, in the Shruti, it is said, the karmis who desire the result of their work should worship all the demigods, forefathers, and guests with appropriate paraphernalia and ingredients so that they may attain the fruit of their actions. If this is not done properly, then their endeavor is useless. Comment on this verse. Why means they must do. Kamavan, one who has lusty desires. Karmi means one who is engaged in mundane activities. Havya Kavya Mayeh means the proper things to offer the demigods and ancestors. Atithi means those guests who never came before. Cha means the family, relatives, and the lineage of the family. The second cha refers to guests in general and all living entities. Karmi refers to the performer of all kind of activities like Nitya, Naimitika, Kamya, Daiva, Paitra, Mangalya, etc. The Sanskrit root of the verb yaj has many meanings. It indicates here the worship of demigods, performance of Shraddha and Tarpana for the ancestors, proper respect, behavior, and service with good food and water for the guests, service to unexpected guests, family members, and other relatives with proper behavior and speech, and satisfying all living entities with food and water. Karma Phalapta means one who performs the activity properly is sure to gain the result. Otherwise, he will lose the fruit. Some of the demigods are worshipped and some are not. some of the forefathers are given food by performing Shraddha and Tarpana and some are not. Some guests are respected and others are not. And among the living entities, including family members and relatives, some of them are satisfied and others are not. Then whatever one has done is useless.
Yeah.
Next, the third evidence, Maharaj. According to Devi Purana, one who is expert in fruitive activities should worship all the demigods and forefathers in every auspicious performances. Otherwise, the doer gets the opposite result. The word Mangalyadishu refers to the activities known as Nitya, Naimitika, Kamya and Paitra. Karmataha means who is expert in performing the fruitive activities. Nara refers to human beings who are under one of the varnas. Ujanam means worshipping the demigods and offering Shraddha and Tarpana to the forefathers. The meaning is that if the 33 million demigods like Ganesha, etc., and all the forefathers beginning with one's own mother and father, up to those who are the source of one's dynasty born from Brahma himself are not worshipped or satisfied properly, then one gets an opposite result, as if he did no such activities at all.
Yeah, no benefit. So you see people worship, and if they don't get what they want, then they also, you see, they lose faith in it, rather than there's something wrong in how they're performing the activities and all. So it's also very common.
Yes, sorry. And then the fourth one, evidence. Similarly, in the Rudra Yamala, it is said, O Durga, bestower of auspiciousness, householders should worship all the demigods and ancestors in all performances. If some of them are not worshipped, then all the performances becomes useless. Comment. The plural word karmasu refers again to activities like Nitya and Naimitika. Grihibi refers to by householders only. Prayatnaha means carefully. All the demigods and forefathers must be worshipped. This means that among the 33 million demigods beginning from Ganesha and all the forefathers, some of them are not worshipped and others and not offered the Shraddha and Tarpana, then the doer does not get any result because the performance is not complete. It is useless. More evidences are not included in this. More evidences are not included as this would increase the size of the book.
In other words, he's pointing out he can bring more evidences, and he's not talking one or two. He's talking enough that the book becomes too big.
Thus, if those householders who are not initiated by Harinama Mantra worship the 33 million demigods like Ganesha, etc., incompletely in their actions of Nitya, Naimitika, etc., and if they offer Shraddha and Tarpana incompletely to their forefathers, beginning from their mother, father, up to Brahma, who are the sources of their dynasty, then according to the proofs of the Puranas, Vedas, Upapuranas, and Agamas, all these actions are considered useless, fruitless, a cause of disappointment. And on the other hand, if those who are initiated by a bona fide spiritual master into the holy name of the Lord, being of any of the four varnas, perform such Nitya and Naimitika acts for the devatas and pitris, then they are committing seva and namaparad. Therefore, for both the devotees of Lord Krishna and those who are born either outside the varnashram or within, the worshipable deity is Lord Hari, the personality of Godhead, and no one else. because he is the controller of the all. And this is the principle.
Yeah, so it means you have to worship all of these personalities, but that's basically impossible. And, you know, and so you have to just worship the Lord. And for someone who, you know, so those, since they don't worship all of them, they won't get the result nicely. Then you see is that those who worship Krishna, that they worship the demigods and that, or any of these, then it's actually, you know, nam and seva aparads. So it's just not done. So basically you can see it, it ends up that it's not recommended for anyone. So here is that you have to do this, but it can't be done. So it's just like you see in the Old Testament, when Abraham asked God, you know, in the sacrifice of the animal, do you want the flesh or you want the blood? And God said, I'll take the blood and you can't have one drop. And one drop is not a figurative, just meaning you don't get any. It means you can't have any of it. So that means it's an impossibility to have the flesh without the blood. So in other words, God's, you know, hinting at that you should be vegetarian. You know, that's actually what's going on there. And so the same way here is you have to worship all the demigods, but it's not possible. And you can accomplish that by worshiping Krishna. And so everything's accomplished. But if in so doing, you also then try to worship the demigods, and that'll be a seva and nama aparad. So in other words, it's just not done from any angle. Yes.
Some people think that worshipping devatas is the same as worshipping Vishnu. The following section refutes that misunderstanding. There are some.
Okay, so now we've dealt with that. There is, you know, upasana means you have the different karma kana, jnana kana, upasana. So upasana is the highest, but that includes worship of demigods. So you're removing that because real upasana means worshiping Vishnu. And these others are for those who are not worshiping Vishnu, but it's not actually what's the it doesn't actually work. So you have to worship Vishnu. So having established that point, that only by worshiping Vishnu, then can you get any benefits of the yajnas, you know, and sacrifice, or can you become purified of the impurities within the heart only by worshiping Vishnu? Now he's going from another angle, is that some think that worship of the demigods and worship of Vishnu is the same. You know, it doesn't matter who you worship, you know.
There are some other persons who think that since the whole universe is pervaded by the potency of Lord Sri Vishnu, therefore this world is also Vishnu. Thus, by worshipping demigods, Vishnu is automatically worshipped. But actually, that kind of worship is not recommended. It is forbidden. This is proven here by the words of Lord Krishna himself. Following are five evidences to prove that the worship of demigods is no substitute for Vishnu worship. First one, Bhagavad Gita 9.23 says, the verse text quoted, Maharaj. This verse may be interpreted in three ways. One meaning is, my faithful devotees, from initiation to the point of death, who occasionally worship the devatas regarding the forbiddance, actually worship me alone with great determination, not the demigods. This is indicated by the word eva, which means that they really worship only me. By worshipping me alone, realizing they are servants and I am to be served, they become free from the cycle of birth and death. The second meaning is as follows. All those who are not my devotees, filled with material desires, shradayanvita, worship demigods with great determination to achieve material results quickly. They worship me in this way, thinking the demigods independent and equal to me. they are not actually worshipping me at all. O son of Kunti, Arjuna, the prescribed process is to hear about me, chant my names, remember and worship me. By this alone, one can be freed from the bondage of birth and death in this material world. All other works, such as worshipping demigods, sacrifice, charity, etc., are prohibited because, being temporary, they are the cause of the repeated cycle of birth and death. Therefore, worship of me is the best activity. Apart from this, there is no path to deliver oneself from the bondage of the material world. Even for Brahma and Indra, who have attained immortality by drinking nectar, what then to speak of mortals?
Yeah. In here you have the aspect is that Krishna's pointing out they are indirectly worshiping him. They don't know it, but he makes the point, you know, therefore they don't get any benefit for worshiping him because they don't know how it's connected to him, how it's going on there, how everything's coming from Krishna, how, you know, it's Krishna's arrangement and all that, and how everyone is, you know, within that aspect of the universal form, what potencies are at work of the Lord. And so for those who see that, then even they have that aspect that sees there, you know, worship the demigod or this or that, they're seeing how they're serving Krishna. So they're worshiping the servants of the Lord and how his creation and everything is established. And for the others who don't worship the Lord, or they think it's the same, they worship the demigods and this and that, they are worshiping the Lord indirectly through his energies and that. But since they don't recognize how he's supreme and it comes from him, they don't get any benefit of worshiping him. Because the point is it's personal. You do something connected with the person, but ignore the person themselves. You know, it's just like, let's say if you know, as we were talking before, you meet somebody on the street and that, and you interact with them personally, and they're with their family, and then having, you know, recognize them, and also, oh, you know, deal with the rest of the family, make some comment, or, you know, pat the kid on the head, or, you know, whatever it is that's done, you know, in the local custom. And so then, even though it's all connected to them, because you see it all connected to them, it's just an extension of them. But if you just, you know, they're coming along with a family, and you only interact with their kid, or only interact with their wife and ignore them, then you're not worshiping them, even though this is all connected to them. And you're respecting what's connected to them. You're seeing it without the person. It's an impersonal aspect, and so you don't get the benefit of worshiping the person. That's okay.
The same words may be interpreted in a third way. Those worshippers of demigods, bewildered by my external potency from their birth, become Shaiva, Shakta, Shaura, Ganapatya, etc. Later, by the instructions of a bona fide spiritual master and the association of Vaishnavas, they worship me alone with extreme faith, Shraddhayanvita, with no other shelter. They certainly become my devotee by the effect of my bhakti, but they must not worship with a material world, material motive, avidipurvakam. To worship me and at the same time to worship demigods is called avidhi. Leaving aside such worship, a person must be dedicated to me fully without worshipping the devatas even in dreams. In that pure condition, that person becomes my devotee. So now, Maharaj, the second proof. Other than devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything is perishable or impermanent and should therefore be abandoned. In Srimad Bhagavatam 6.9.22, it is said, free from all material conceptions of existence and never wonder struck by anything, the Lord is always jubilant and fully satisfied by his own spiritual perfection. He has no material designation, and therefore he is steady and unattached. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the only shelter of everyone. Anyone desiring to be protected by others is certainly a great fool who desires to cross the sea by holding the tail of a dog. Comment on this verse. Those who are situated in Varna and Ashrama and do not worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, but superficial demigods, are greatly foolish. What are the qualities of Govinda? He is always satisfied by the perfection of his 8 kinds of opulences called anima, lagima, etc. He alone awards the surrendered souls their desired goal. Therefore, other than him, no one else is fully satisfied. Lord Govinda is avismita, because being eternal, there is no question of wonder in him. He is prashanta, because he has a form desired by his devotees. Bewildered by the external potency of the Lord, a person leaves the devotional service of the Supreme Lord and worships demigods. He is foolish. He is described as a foolish man trying to cross the ocean by holding the tail of a dog. Thus, one who has turned his face from the Lord to serve demigods, to fulfill his insignificant desires, get no result, as everything is dependent on the Supreme Lord. He has no way to escape from the bondage of repeated birth and death.
Yeah, so here you also see an indication of what that means, no result. Because they don't get out of the cycle of birth and death. That will continue. So even you get all these nice facilities, it will be lost. You know, you have to work so long, and finally when you get everything, then what's there? Like the other day, someone was explaining about, I think they were talking to, you know, something to a wealthy person, you know, about wealthy people, is that these wealthy persons, we look at them and think, oh, they must be enjoying so much. But at the same time, as they're working so hard, spending so much time, that's the time there's no family, there's no interaction. They spend the whole day working or thinking about it. They actually don't have any time to, you know, enjoy the benefits of having all those facilities, you know, and money. So the living entity, he works so hard, gets so many, and then it's temporary because it will be lost. You work for it, you get it. Next life, it's you know, when you die, it's gone. So you know, this is the real meaning of there's no benefit. You might see some external, some aspect, because there is some piety there. But the point is there'll be no benefit from it, and no satisfaction for the living entity. They can't gain any satisfaction from this kind of approach. Yes, please.
The next evidence. In Padma Purana, it is said, as a person desires to cross the ocean by holding a tail of a dog, similarly, an unintelligent man desires to deliver himself from the material bondage by worshipping others, giving up Lord Hari. Here the word ananyopasanaya means serving or worshipping the external and marginal energies of the Lord, such as demigods and other living entities. Therefore, other than Lord Hari, there is no one else who is worshipable in this material world. As Lord Shiva mentions to Lord Shiva has mentioned to Narada, O Narada, in this world, no one else but Lord Hari is to be worshipped by all. Apart from him, no one else can deliver the souls from the ocean of birth and death and no one else can fulfill the desires of the materialists. Comment in this. Bhuvane means not only on this middle planet, but on all the 14 planets, the Supreme Lord Hari is to be worshipped by all, even Lord Brahma. It is concluded that other than him, no one in existence is to be worshipped. But even if one worships the Lord's external and marginal potencies to fulfill all his desires according to prescription of the Vedas, Puranas, Smritis and Agamas, the bestower of fulfillment to the demigods is Lord Sri Hari. Therefore, being among the external and marginal potencies, the demigods have no power to cut off the bondage of the ocean of birth and death. Except for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, no one can mitigate the great fear of the dangerous circuit of mundane existence.
Yeah, because everything's coming from Vishnu anyway. It means the demigods, they have to get the permission of the Lord to give benefits. It's not that, I mean, as a government official, they're not actually the government. They're the people who do the work of the government. But the authority is the Supreme Lord. What we see in Purusha Shukta is that the Lord has expanded, this material creation so that these living entities may get the results of the fruitive work, but ultimately it's for getting out of this. So there is only Krishna. Everything is coming from him. So there is only actually a real relationship with Krishna. And anything else is going to be illusory because if you ignore the personal by the impersonal, you don't get the benefit of the personal. And the impersonal can only give a partial result because it only deals with some aspects of existence and some aspects of work and results.
The last evidence.
Yes.
In Srimad Bhagavatam 11.19.9, Uddhava says to the Lord, "My dear Lord, for one who tormented on the terrible path of birth and death and constantly overwhelmed by the threefold miseries, I do not see any possible shelter other than your two lotus feet, which are just like a refreshing umbrella that pours down showers of delicious nectar." I think it's comment by another Acharya on this verse. "O Lord, on this terrible path of birth and death, the souls who are suffering by the miseries such as Adidaivika, Adibhautika and Adhyatmika and entering repeatedly the womb have no shelter except for that." Except for the umbrella of your lotus feet, I don't see any other shelter. As a person protects himself from the fierce sunshine and rain by holding an umbrella, so the souls who are bound by the ropes of birth and death escape that bondage by going under the umbrella of your lotus feet. Comment on this verse. Amritam means the four kinds of salvations, such as attaining the same abode as the Lord and serving his lotus feet and thereby attaining liberation from the transmigration of the body. The Lord's feet produce showers of bliss in the form of different types of liberation, like the unlimited drops of water in a shower of rain. For that reason, there is no other way to get out from the existence of the mundane world except these two lotus feet of yours, O Absolute Truth, Personality of Godhead. In this world, you are the only shelter of the demigods, demons, and human beings. One who does not worship your lotus feet never achieves liberation, and the one who serves your lotus feet becomes free from the bondage of the material world and remains in happiness always in this life and the next. This finishes my
yes. Yes. No, it's also the time is yes. up. So then we'll stop here for today. Very nice, very nice. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada.